Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod, the Walking Dead season special, where we're talking about every episode of season 8 of The Walking Dead. My name is Howell. One of Matthew or Jamie is displaying the sounds of their throat to us, having a drink. I'm guessing that it's Matthew Wandless from London.
My apologies, yeah, just had a little sip of this delightful apple and elderflower cordial.
Little note, last week I noticed that one of you was making some kind of strange background noise that was like a... It was weird, it was like one of you was sanding your leg or something, scratching your leg throughout the whole podcast. I didn't notice till afterwards.
Was it this?
Yes. What's
that? That's me scratching my beard. I'm sorry.
You were musing your beard. Yeah. Well, that's Matt in London, and as usual, Jamie, who normally gets top of the list of credits, is now bottom of the list.
And yet I smile.
Hey. Wonderful.
Right in there.
Oh. This is going to be a good week for Howell's King Ezekiel impression, isn't it?
Let me say this. I'm not going to go into personal life, but there's been some tricky things going on in personal life recently. They're all fine now. But at the point that I watched this episode, seeing King Ezekiel say, "And yet I smile," suddenly stopped annoying me. And actually, I'm jumping ahead perhaps, but this episode made me care about King Ezekiel more than I ever have before. I really like the character after this episode.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was a great episode and a great performance. And it was a really good, I mean, let's just dive in there. This was a good episode, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, very strong.
Really good. Okay, well, let's kind of go through it a bit at a time. Just a reminder, this episode of the Box Set Pod contains a lot of spoilers. You've been warned. Pre-note. Queen, my wife calls the trash people bin dippers. And calls the main woman Queen Bin Dipper. Queen Bin Dipper is on the main titles. Does she deserve this?
Whoa.
I've noticed it every week, or Sarah has. What Queen Bin Dipper is listed. What's her name? Penelope or something like that. She's got a proper British name.
That makes me worried, because that means I reckon she's got to be playing a big part in at least half the series. Mm.
Now, what we have to remember is that when people sign on to shows, lots of negotiations over money happen, but also negotiations over credits. And it's quite possible that the negotiation that she would be on the credits was done at the beginning of season 7, before they realised that they need as little of Bin Dipper in there as possible.
Possibly. No, I doubt it.
I think there's probably a good reason for her being on that title screen. Yeah. I hadn't noticed.
They can't just not go back to them at all.
Well, they've got to.
No.
I just hope that it's a very, you know, maybe a nuclear bomb is dropped.
Yeah, I hope they just go back to them to kill them. That'd be the idea.
Yeah, a massacre. Yeah. A massacre at Bin Dipper Central.
Yeah. Yeah. Did anyone else think Matt was right as this started? That war is, or at least maybe Matt didn't think this last week, actually, the war is going to last the whole series, and now we're into bleeding flashbacks for padding. You know when it showed the king preparing his hair? I thought it was a flashback to before, and then he walked out and he realised it was actually only a slight flashback. But let's bear in mind that up until this point, Andrew Lincoln's screen time this series so far probably adds up to about 8 minutes, doesn't it?
No. And that whole sequence in episode 2 where he was in there with Matey from back in Atlanta.
I don't think Morales. That's as long as you thought it was. I think that was the last 5 minutes of the episode.
No, it wasn't there, because it was the last 5 minutes of the episode, and then it started the next one, the one where I wasn't on the show.
Mm, Okay, I still think he's had very little screen time.
I'm not trying to say that he hasn't had any screen time, but it's not as little as you make out.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of answers those questions about, you know, how long will Andrew Lincoln do it for and stuff. I imagine the negotiation isn't necessarily how long he'll do it for, but how many hours he wants to put in, like, week on week of his year into this stuff. And this is one way of sorting it out, doing these bottle episodes that don't really involve him until an Indiana Jones car chase.
Maybe. I don't know. I think he'll certainly have a larger part to play later in the series.
This, I'm sorry to sidestep again. We'll get back to the episode, but this seems like a good time. On that subject, how much do you think Andrew Lincoln is paid? I asked Forbes via the internet.
I'd go for per episode.
Yeah, and I'll preempt this with the key cast members of The Big Bang Theory, Jim Parsons, etc. A million an episode for each of the 24 episodes.
Ooh, I'd go with 800,000
per ep.
Yeah,
Matt, higher or lower?
I would say lower.
It is lower. How much lower do you think it is, Matt?
I reckon it's probably closer to about 400,000 an episode.
According to published reports, Andrew Lincoln earns
maybe even less.
$90,000 per episode.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
$1.4 million a year, which is a relative pittance compared to other, you know, stars of his caliber.
Yeah, but it depends on the nature of the show, because I can't imagine this show is anywhere near as popular as something as mind-numbingly dull as The Big Bang Theory.
And also probably less time-consuming in some ways, because that cast are in every scene of every episode pretty much, aren't they? I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it shows the commitment of the guy, though, because his agent will be worth the salt, and if he were to demand that amount of money, it would probably destroy it, because AMC ain't putting that money in, you know, or if they are, it's going to something else, which is good, like CGI. Do you think Andrew Lincoln looks at Shiva and goes, God, I could have taken a chunk of that?
Well, I was just thinking how much of the budget they blew on Shiva, and whether that came into the negotiations about whether she lasted this series or not.
Probably not. Although,
is Shiva on the credits?
Yeah, it should be. And Shiva dies in the comics.
Is Shiva played by Andy Serkis?
Should they?
Almost certainly not.
Okay,
Andy
Serkis
is number two.
So do we like these bottle episodes then? Do we like this staying with the king pretty much for the whole episode? Do we like these things?
This isn't a bottle episode.
It sort of is.
No, a bottle episode is where a situation is contrived where people are stuck in a place together.
Is that not what this was?
No.
They were stuck in a car park together, being attacked by walkers.
No, that was just the focus of the episode. Some people are on the outside, some people are on the inside. That's being pernickety. A bottle episode is like in The West Wing when they have that one where they shut down the White House and everyone's stuck in different rooms.
Yeah, I'd say this is exactly the same as that.
I guess I wouldn't. I'd call this more of like a character study episode, isn't it? Because
yeah, go on, sorry.
No, yeah, and you know, it just feels very much focused on an individual kind of person's mentality, and it goes through. You know, there are other characters within that, but it just—I know what you mean with the bottle episode. It does. I think what gives it its strength, this episode, is that it is just very, very focused, and the stakes are understandable immediately. You know, you're thrown into the draw. I thought what was really good was the opening, like the speech, and then cutting to the dead people and the guts, and then the turn into the zombie. It was a really good, strong opening to an episode.
Yeah, again, it was like, oh no, they're going to do all the flashbacks and pad it out. But then, bang, we're back to where we were. Great. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, when they had the opening shots, actually, I said, ooh, origin story. I was wrong.
Just to read from TheVerge.com, which critiques this episode. On Some Guy, we're getting yet another bottle episode, a standalone episode with fewer cast members and locations usually to save on budget. just throwing that in there.
I'm perfectly happy for two people to be wrong.
This article also completely slags it off. What do you think about this? Basically, it's saying that these things are a distraction. So far, Negan has had no time on the thing. Thank God they've got rid of Shiva, because it's one of the fantastical disasters that they introduced in season 7, which I would include bin dippers in that list. They're ticking them off. It begins to become convincing, an argument like that, when they make one point that agrees with you. But I don't think that this is a catastrophe, this series.
I can see their point, but I disagree with it. Because for me, if they just focused on Negan and got that all out of the way straight away, then I don't like for shows to be too plot-driven.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're asking for. And when you do that, it means that all you really have is to keep the tension up, is to hold back the story.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a much more interesting way of doing it, having it on this grander scale. And I mean, you know, we've talked about this before a couple of times. This is what I like about the show. They don't just show you the tight keyhole of the story. You get to see everything.
Exactly,
and that's the strength of it.
You enter a universe with the show, and time pace doesn't kind of matter as much as character, and it doesn't annoy me in that way that I criticise so many things recently, because I heard an interview recently where somebody said, you know, series don't make money by just having one series, and that's why this thing that started to really gripe me about whodunits not ending, and you know, even the one that Matt and I disagreed on most, which was Handmaid's Tale, that this series never ever gives me that feeling. I never go, oh, move quicker. I might be annoyed that I'm not with Rick or something, but I never kind of get that feeling that I'm being purposely led down a path in order to slow me down. I kind of always respect that they're going at a pace that they want to go at. Partly because the universe is so large that if they did want to go at a faster pace, they could, couldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it is an important thing to slow the plot down for as well, because getting these guns over to the sanctuary to get rid of all these zombies, to save Negan and his crew, is quite a pivotal, important part of the war. So this actual segment of time is quite important. Can they stop these guns arriving back at the sanctuary? Can they stop Negan from being saved? So it's in a way, it's like, you know, a very sort of selective period of time, like in a war film, you know, the old sort of like Second World War films, where a train has to, you know, you have to stop a train from arriving somewhere. It's got that real momentum to it.
However, I had one criticism of the showrunners, it's, you know, I said on the episode when you weren't here, Matt, I said, I just want a little reminder at the beginning, a map on the screen going, the treasure's here, we need to get to it. In this episode, that guns thing, getting the guns, genuinely only occurred to me when Carol was right at the point of trying to save the king and giving up. Like, I kind of wish that, I think that they could avoid a lot of internet criticism if they just found a classy way of throwing in a couple of lines at the beginning going, by the way, everyone, we're trying to get these guns here to that point in order to save the day. You just say it and then do it.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but for me, I am so glad that they don't do that, that they don't fall into that. Because I'm not trying to be a dick about it or self-aggrandizing, but like, I don't think it's difficult to follow. And I think if you start chucking in stuff like that, then you're on a slippery slope to spoon feeding your audience.
Yeah, but I think there's a huge difference between spoon feeding and just doing it classically. Like, there's methods of making TV shows, which everybody's got to do, and not everybody in the world is as smart as you. You know, you can keep track of that stuff.
I don't think I'm even that smart. I think you just have to focus.
Yeah, but you know, even Shakespeare,
it's like
regularly
when I hear about people who can't watch The Wire because they need to have subtitles on or something like that. Just listen.
Yeah, but even Shakespeare had his devices which regularly reminded the people in the bear pit that what is going on. And
but Shakespeare is not naturalism.
Nobody's
and classic. And this is trying to be.
Yeah,
and I think when you start having characters behave in a way that is serving the audience rather than the character, then you're on a slippery slope. And I admit, you know, there are ways of doing it with, and it can be a little bit more classy than that. But I like the fact that they aren't.
Well,
and I find it annoying when they do.
Well, I thought this episode was clear. I thought it was actually I understood very quickly. I think there's a bit in the early on in the episode where they're dismantling the machine gun and they make it quite clear that they're going to have to get these guns to Negan and the crew.
Oh, they probably did do. They probably did do what.
Yeah, and in fact, those characters are entirely audience serving. Those random henchmen, and I think they're very weak because.
All right. Well, let's say that they do it. It's just that I'm too busy looking down and making notes to spot the.
And I think the thing is we're comparing this to episode 2, which I think we have a valid complaint about, Matt, is that I just thought it was slightly poor storytelling, the way they didn't make the stakes clear enough with that episode. This episode, the stakes are made very clear, but not in too like an obvious and kind of, oh, look at what we've got to do. They were done in a very kind of easy way, conversational way, and then boom, you understand what Carol's mission is. You understand what she's trying to do, and it really worked because of that. It gave it an intensity.
Did anyone else?
No, I hear what you're saying, and I don't want to go back to episode 2 too much, but I thought what they were doing there was that they were, I think they were deliberately concealing part of it. Certainly, like, you're never sure who's going to be where at any given time. You're never, because like it was, there was kind of a lovely moment this week when you realized after the van drove away that Rick and Daryl were on the case because we had no reason to, I suppose they did mention it briefly last week, but it wasn't obvious that those two guys were going to the same location that Carol and Ezekiel were at until they rode over the horizon. Just as the same in that episode 2, when all the guns and stuff were happening, they were saying we just need to hold them here. It wasn't immediately obvious. I mean, I thought it, but
It was AMC, obvious
that they were waiting for the dead to arise and then start eating them as well.
I think as if AMC can employ you to pop up at the end of an episode to explain to everybody why it was
now, guys,
so good.
Let's go through it scene by scene.
Yes, yeah.
I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who can do that. Have a look on YouTube.
Wouldn't Carol's story, you know, as she's creeping around the boxes with the henchmen wandering around in the background for the first time, wouldn't it sound great with the Beverly Hills Cop music behind it?
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me of the first
actually,
Beverly Hills Cop.
It wouldn't be the fifth, would it? It would be just the bass line then.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little bit of it.
Or the theme from Fletch as well.
I watched Fletch recently. Do you know, in Fletch, I don't think they use any piece of music other than that all the way through. It's horrendous. Like, horrendous. Horrendous.
You know what I love about Carol, though? Just stood a stop on Carol. Don't you just love like the way Carol looks so miserable before she's about to massacre people, even though she knows she's going to kill them all?
Yeah.
She just does it again.
Yeah.
What I like about Carol now is she's starting to develop these kind of MacGyver kind of skills. And you know, when you see her back enough, did you think for a second when she like hung her machine gun on the wing mirror of that car? And then the next thing she was surrendering, I was like, oh my God, she's figured out a way to fire it with her foot.
I did. Yeah. What's the film where someone's got it all gaffer taped to their back? That's what I was expecting.
That's Die Hard.
Yeah. I thought it was Die Hard. She's amazing.
But then she's like, you know, she makes a bit of time, makes a bit of space for herself, hits the button, the zombies come in. She's a badass, and I love it. And when she just shot the fuck out of those guys with the guns, I really enjoyed that. It's just like, because often in these shows and in anything, you know, you've got people with machine guns shooting at each other from a relatively short distance away and hitting nothing but air. But here it's just like there's four guys in a row and Carol mows the ball down in the space of half a second. That's
beautiful.
Yeah. No fucking around.
And how much did you enjoy Carol shooting them from the ceiling? Yes. Hello. That was awesome. It's like Carol's superb. Climbed up into the ceiling and has shot from there.
Again, Die Hard.
Yeah, Die Hard, Beverly Hills Cop. It was so 80s. And then, of course, if this is Act One ends with, I've just written down, go Jerry. Jerry steps in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He slices that hillbilly like a slice of bread, doesn't he? Yes, I mean, that's straight down the middle.
Yeah. Beautiful.
And then struggles with the padlock.
Yeah.
What was that about?
Yeah, can I just say, next to the padlock was just normal fencing that was very thin. If you had the tools that you had.
That with the axe.
Yeah. Surely it could have cut through 4 millimeter steel.
Yeah.
Any other notes before Jerry's point? Any other points on Act One before we move along?
No, okay. Although there was a point where I was worried that Ezekiel wasn't going to drop the king thing even after everyone was dead.
Let me ask you that. Why? This is kind of Act Two now, really. The King's Zoo speech was excellent. I really liked it. It made me really like the king. Great character. But why, when he's talking alone to Carol, does he not drop the accent? Because he's done that before. And why, when all was lost in that Act One, when everything is gone and he's just going, oh my God, everything's lost, the accent hasn't gone?
I think because what you're doing, you're watching a guy gradually break down, like all of his kind of pretenses that he's put up over the years is gradually being shredded away as he sees all these people he loves and cares about killed until the point where, right at the end, where he's thinking, leave me, save yourself, he actually does that. He just gives up and goes, every pretense is gone. I'm just some guy. Get the hell out of here. I am not a freaking king, Jerry.
Oh, he said, I'm just some guy, and that's the title of the episode.
Yes, he did. Oh, you didn't see that. Okay.
Oh, dear.
Have we heard his completely normal voice before? I can't remember what he said when he first talked to Carol.
Yeah, he first met Carol. He's like,
"But
I'm not going to do."
What did he sound like though?
Kind of a cool guy.
Cool guy. He used it
was
in the second
just
episode.
Was he just a guy of talking motherfucker?
Yeah, he was like that.
I think. Yeah, he said in the second episode, "You fake it till you make it." You know, he's he's used it before.
So he has a regional American accent, basically.
Mm. Basically, yeah. And the question with Ezekiel is, you know. Is this the end of King Ezekiel? Is he just going to drop all known kind of, you know, idea of being a king now? These people are looking at him. He walks past them. Is he done for?
The only
I reckon he is. Yeah, I reckon it's going to take him a long time to come back from this.
I don't think so. I think there's only one person can bring him back from that, and that's Carol. And she has to say the words, "And yet I smile," to him.
Good call, actually. Good shout.
Possibly.
It's got to be, because she's been won round by his positive thinking. She's seen the value of it and believes in it slightly now, I think, and is kind of going to kick his ass. She's going to fire it back at him, I think.
Yeah, because I think that's the important thing with the character of Ezekiel that I didn't really actually get until this episode, is that the idea of believing in a myth and following a fantastical idea of a human being and an idea of honor and living in a kingdom was they really captured that in this episode, that that's what he was about, and he understood he was serving the people in that way. And also Jerry has that great line when they're amongst the zombies where he says, "Oh, it's been quite a ride," or what a ride. Yeah. And I think that Jerry's loved the ride of being a servant to a king, even if it's a pretend king in a zombie apocalypse. It's meant something to him. And I thought this episode was really good at capturing that, and also watching Ezekiel's sort of mask fall off in a very slow process, but a very sort of meaningful one.
So let's jump to a key moment of Act Two then. It's the old car chase. How Indiana Jones was that? A Jurassic Park,
exactly,
in fact.
It's exactly what I thought. I thought Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw all that jumping to the car from it was awesome.
There was a little nod to Jurassic Park as well, I think, looking in the rearview mirror. They cut short of having the writing on there of objects look bigger than they appear, or whatever the line is on American cars. But
maybe closer than they appear.
Yeah. And I think moment of the episode for me, funny moment of the episode, was Andrew Lincoln climbing out of the bushes inelegantly after the car crash. You know, when Daryl's...
When Daryl says,
you look like shit. Yeah, does he look like shit? It's brilliant. They're little double acts I could watch all day, and we don't get enough of it yet.
The thing is with that, like, I liked it, but I thought we were developing a certain tension between Daryl and Rick.
We are, but they're brothers. They're brothers.
Doesn't mean it's gone.
Yeah, they've got to... Okay. You know, they're tight. Ultimately, they'll stick by each other above an idea, if it comes to it.
Yeah, and those two guys... Well, no, I don't know about that. But those two guys were shooting at them as well, so there's no question there.
You think that if it came to it, Matt, well, they would turn against each other?
Well, this is what we were talking about last week. You were saying that you think Rick's not going to kill Negan.
And Daryl will want him dead. Absolutely, but I still don't think that Rick or Daryl would ever kill each other. No way.
No, I'm not saying that, but they might fight.
Good. So that was fun. Anything else on the car chase?
I liked the man with the machine gun. Missing everything.
How
and then Daryl bullseyeing him in the forehead with a pistol on the bike.
It didn't even look that quick. It didn't even look that fast.
Baff.
But it was great. It was great.
No, it was good. It's where you get a sequence like that in this show, really. It's all a bit more kind of close quarters, nitty gritty, like Bourne Identity fighting. And then to have a bit more of an elaborate set piece was kind of refreshing.
Now, it's never worthwhile talking about realistic, you know, like, could he have hacked the fence before? It's kind of moot point.
No, I know, you know, what's the point?
But my wife did say to me, in top trumps, toxic walkers don't beat tigers. Discuss.
Yeah, oh, poor Shiva. I mean, yeah, she's been hard done by there, really.
I think so.
But I think Shiva would have probably jumped away
at
some point rather than just letting them kind of climb on top of her.
Yeah, and she could have whipped them all off. She could take on 100. Man.
Easy.
But, you know, there we go.
She had to go.
What do you think the rules are with animals, though? I mean, do you think an animal gets bitten by a zombie, they become a zombie animal?
That's what I was going to ask. Are we going to get a toxic zombie tiger?
No, it's only humans.
Well, no, because, I mean, obviously, there are plenty of humans who usually just get torn to pieces by the walkers rather than turned.
I think
it looked like that was very much what was happening to Shiva.
I think, actually, in the series that Matthew Wandless, quote, snobbery, will never watch, Fear the Walking Dead, I think there is actually an explanation that, no, this is humans, because that's the basis of a lot of the religious sort of arguments of this has been brought upon us.
Brought upon humans.
Yeah, because of our sins kind of thing, you know. Which Fear the Walking Dead can explore a bit more because it's closer to the beginning of the apocalypse. Yeah, so sad that Shiva went, but there we go. And again,
I found it a bit of an emotional disconnect, actually. It didn't really get me in a way that and normally an animal dying really would.
Yeah,
but I think it is a little bit because she's the only CGI thing in the entire show that I just kind of go,
that's right.
I know. I did find myself watching the CGI and at times disapproving of the levels of special effects.
Well, it's the death of an idea, it's the death of a symbol, and it's the death of one of our key leaders' superpowers, isn't it? Ooh. Can't take on Negan with the tiger now.
No, and they did lose a lot of people, actually, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a big blow. But they didn't get the gun. They've got the big gun now. There is some. It's a small victory, but as in all wars, there's a lot of defeat with the victors as well.
But a great episode, and
it was it was the best episode of the series by far for me. It was focused, and it was tense. And it was gripping.
And while the blood ran in the stream from Shiva, my wife turned to me and said, "You know who I wish it was? Bin Dipper."
Bin Dipper. Well, this it takes me to my... mentioning the Bin Dipper stuff makes me think that what we're going to see next is Negan and his forces held back by the zombies, potentially on the way down, and then the Bin Dippers must come and save them. That's what I'm guessing happens
the
here.
The Bin Dippers save the day?
Save the saviors.
Save the saviors.
Yeah.
Which would make, though, surely that's too important for them, because that would make them then our most hated tribe. Whereas actually, what they represent is those who can be bought at any price. Yeah. The way they operate is just whoever bids highest, we're with them. So, how does that fit in with your predictions? I don't
think, yeah, you're right. They wouldn't save anyone, would they, unless it was for their benefit.
Mm. So if Andrew Lincoln goes, listen, between Alexandria and the sanctuary, I can get you 50 massive wheelie bins, they're in.
She'd probably do it just for a night alone with Rick. I mean, she's obsessed with his ass.
That's true. With you in Skip. For help with war. Oh, that's so ridiculous. I wish they'd just get rid of him. I wish in the first 5 minutes it would have gone, oh, the Bin Dippers are gone.
Just what? Just like a couple of minutes at the end of the episode, you see all the Bin Dippers on fire. And there's no reason for it whatsoever. You see them on fire, and then the episode ends.
Oh, dear. Right, anything missed across the board, boys?
No,
I mean, we haven't done our ratings track yet.
Yeah,
okay.
Give our ratings.
Well, for me, around the point that the king did his speech, just after the king did his speech, I'm not saying the speech on its own was amazing, but the point at which I really started caring about things was just after that, hearing him talk about the zoo and all of that. So I'm up at a 9 now. I am up at a 9. I'm ready for the next episode. Matt.
But where did you start at? Where did you come in at?
I think I came in at a 7 or 8.
Okay.
So I've not moved far, but it's heading in the right direction. Matthew?
I came in at an 8.
And you stayed at an 8.
And I left at...
8.5. Wow. Oh. Wow, we've had movement. Jamie, what
there
about
we go.
You?
I've gone from a 7.5 to a 9.
Oh.
Wow. There we go.
So much more, it's a roller coaster ride for you.
It certainly is. Yeah,
up and down.
Towels and blows of 2, haven't you?
I know. Remember those days?
God.
Yeah. And that was for the King's speech as well. And now see where you are. You see, it's a long journey with The Walking Dead. It's not about just like a, you know, little sprints here and there.
Absolutely correct. And next week we come to episode 5, which is called The Big Scary U, which I wonder what that means. Is it something the shape of a U? Is it a person? Is it a
sheep?
Maybe.
Oh, that's a good question. No, it's spelt Y-E-W, isn't it?
Or are we going to a Negan priest bottle episode and we learn about Negan and he talks about the scariest thing
really,
is you.
Oh, I saw
that
really
would be a
bottle
episode.
Just that like
would,
this one.
Would, and I, that would be a great one. I really need Negan to have his own backstory told. I want to hear it. I want to sit down. I want to wallow in it.
Well,
do you not worry a bit about that? Because for me, I don't really feel like there's... anything that they can do that would be satisfying.
Well, it's going to happen. They've said it's going to happen.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yep.
Great. I think it'll be good. I think if they do it right, they can really add some extra sort of layer to this man and his particular penchant for bat crimes.
Great.
Yeah. I just don't know what Wright looks like with that.
I know.
Maybe.
I know. My recording of this podcast getting more and more difficult because I'm in the spare room where we pile up the Christmas presents as we buy them. I wish I could tell you what I was surrounded by, but there's some things that I could have opened and eaten in the course of this.
Oh.
It's very difficult. Very, very difficult. Yeah. Anyway,
it's piling early. It's not even December.
Hell yeah, we get it done early. I'll give you my top secret tip once we've stopped recording, because I don't want my family to hear it. Thank you.
I'm a
bin dipper.
Walking Dead diversion.
Yes.
I'm watching. I'm always at the end of Transparent season 4 at the moment.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, I'm just. This is a plea, really, to just give it another go, because I really, it's an extraordinary TV show.
Okay. Well, I'll sign up to Amazon again at some point. But doesn't excite me. I've started The Sinner on Netflix. Very good, and also, although annoying, because it's not a whodunit, but it's a whydunit, and it's very interesting. And Netflix released their top 20, or it's been released, Netflix top 20 UK TV shows this week. We should be doing this. What do you think's at number one?
Interesting. What, the most watched in the UK?
Yeah.
House of Cards.
Marvel's The Defenders. House of Cards.
Oh, well, hang on, just this week?
I'm not exactly sure, but this is what they've released. These are the figures. I think
that
it's overall.
Because no way The Defenders is higher than House of Cards.
Think about it. Marvel's massive.
But The Defenders has only been out for like a month. The House of Cards has been on there for years.
House of Cards is at number 17.
Yeah, well, in that case, this is contemporary. This is based on a short, recent period of time.
Well, it may be a recent, but it's not a week, because at number two is one of my favourites, Gilmore Girls, A Year in the Life, the new Gilmore Girls. This is the size of the audiences of these things. This is why Disney bought Marvel. This is why Netflix paid for the Gilmore Girls to come back. From then on, The Seven Deadly Sins, Santa Clara Diet, Orange is the New Black is at 5, Luther is at 6, F is for Family, which is brilliant, is at number 7, Trailer Park Boys, at number 9, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, yes! Number 10, The Ranch, Atypical's at number 11, and I'll stop just before number 13, which is Love. At number 12 is Stranger Things, all the way down at number 12.
Wow.
Wow, that is disappointing, isn't it? I finished it on Friday.
It's great.
Yeah. We need to do that at some point, don't
we? Yeah, quick capsule review, though. Very good.
Very good. I love it.
I have to say, you know what? They did something incredibly difficult, and that's follow something with high expectation and and that level of success that could drive something in the wrong direction, and they nailed it. Nailed it.
And if you want to play an old style arcade game that is brilliant, get the Stranger Things app. It's great. I love it.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to do that.
Really good fun.
Yeah.
Good luck.
One more thing. Has anyone been watching Star Trek Discovery?
Nah, I can't be bothered. I hate her. She's annoyed me all the way through The Walking Dead. And
what?
Oh, the actress annoys me so much. She's so overcommitted to everything. She acts with her eyebrows all the time. And yet, when she first arrived in the prison, the very first series, she wasn't like that. She was a really good actress with integrity, and then she started to go into the like, I'm always on the verge of tears face. Oh, she annoys me.
Okay, fair enough.
Brutal.
I'd choose the bin dippers over her.
Oh,
hell,
that's terrible.
Yeah, maybe the bin.
I don't think you mean that.
Maybe in Star Trek she'll come across.
I don't think you do.
She'll come across Bin Dipper Planet. Be a full planet of bin dippers. It is very Klingon, isn't it?
Wow.
Right.
So harsh.
See you next week for The Big Scary You. As usual, agree with us, disagree with us, just get in touch. Email us, studio@theboxsetpod.com. Goodbye.
Bye.
You can say bye, Jamie?
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.